like waves atop the ocean. Let them roll. Breathe out, let go. All the weight you hold so tight. What's so wrong or can't be right? Drop your stone. Call him off, love. The hits on your own thoughts. Be still and know I am God. Be still and know I am.
Today's interview is with Adam Anderson, who you just heard. That is the song Be Still, and I'll tell you more about it as we go, but definitely check the podcast description where you can get some of his music for free.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast, All In with Jordan Apodaca. I'm here today with my friend Adam Anderson, and as I mentioned in my last episode, I've been pursuing coaching, and along that route, it had helped led me into a number of different Facebook groups where I was meeting people and talking to them. And one of those people who actually became one of my biggest advocates for my coaching is Adam Anderson. I met him because he just started commenting in various areas on the Facebook groups that we were in, just connecting me with different people. And it was just really encouraging, really cool to see someone who was looking out not just for himself, as we'll get into later in this interview. He's a musician. He's pursuing business himself right now. And so he wasn't just looking out for like, well, how can I succeed? How can I move forward in life? But he had his eyes out for people like me who are also just starting. So I just thought that was really awesome. He is also a former evangelical like I am. And so I wanted to get him on here to just talk about all kinds of different things from growing up in evangelicalism, leaving it, current beliefs, business pursuits, the whole spectrum. So Adam, how about you just introduce yourself, say hi, and just give us a little bit of a background on you.
All right, cool. First of all, thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm Adam Anderson. I live in Southeast Texas, and I've been doing music, writing music, making music since I was. It's really hard to say for sure because my first love was writing, and eventually I started enjoying music, and just started kind of incorporating that in with love of writing. So I was writing songs before I knew how to play anything. And, after I, popped enough strings on guitars, eventually I started writing stuff myself and, started learning to play songs and played in church and stuff. So all together, it's probably been about 13, 14 years of doing that, writing songs.
So did you start off then? You said you were writing before you started making music. Was it writing like poetry?
There were probably silly songs like, I remember reading some to my fourth grade reading writing teacher. That was the person in my life that showed me that writing could be fun, it could be cathartic, it could be a way to explore the world and yourself. And so I started showing some of the first things I started putting together to her, and then from there, rest is kind of history, I guess.
That's awesome. And so speaking of history, I'd love to just get into a little bit more of your personal history. I did meet you through one of those ex-evangelical Facebook groups. And so I'd love to just kind of hear your perspective about, what it was like growing up within evangelicalism. What are some of the pros and cons in your mind? And it doesn't have to be the super big, super full story. I'll ask you questions along the way, but kind of what was your story there?
I got saved, air quotes, and 10 years old at a vacation Bible school. I didn't really know anybody in the area. We just moved there, me and my family, because my dad had changed jobs. And the one person that I did know in the town at the time invited me to go do this thing with them during the summer. And I had gone to private school and stuff before that. We had chapel every day and had read the Bible all the time in class. But I don't know if I ever really locked into it myself as a youngin at that point. But somewhere along the year of my first year in that town and being involved with that church through that friend, I hit that point where, such a weird story to explain. I came to believe all of it. Like I guess I was scared into it, but I didn't think that way at the time. It was like I saw the gates of heaven and I suddenly realized what, like, such a terrible sinner that I was, and I was in need of grace unfailing, and just, you can go on with beautiful poetry, about the idea. But yeah, it was beautiful to me, and I would have said identity in Christ was how I knew myself and understood the world around me. Like, everything wasn't just like tied to that. It was fueled by that. And it was just something that was beautiful and wonderful to me until it wasn't. And I guess it wasn't all of a sudden. It was like, I was always encouraged to like question and dig deeper in my faith and doubts and stuff. Until I stopped getting the right answers and the prescribed vocabulary words to fill in the blanks with. And it's really interesting to me, not to sound arrogant or like my story is more legitimate than anyone else's that has left the church or whatever. But it continually I find that lots of people that left the church or left the faith point back to people that hurt them in the church, and maybe that's more true for me than I'd like to admit, but I still see it as like the doctrine became revealed as very toxic to me, and it was just like, oh my goodness, well, let me kick these dogs out. Morty, come on. Morty, you too, come on. Sorry, there's always loud scratching each other and making noise.
No worries. That was the doctrine.
Yeah. It was, I guess, the first little, nagging issue was the simplicity that Christians around me used to explain away acceptable sexuality. And growing up, I was kind of like, it was weird. I was sort of known by lots of people as like a Christian Bible study leader, church person, even like in high school. And I remember people asking me questions like, why does the Bible say this about this? And I'm like, I'm in high school. I don't know. And so I would just, but I was like, they came to me. And so I figured like God gave me this opportunity to talk to them for a reason. And so I would do like research and stuff. And eventually I became aware just by like following Christians who encouraged me in my faith in ways that were acceptable to the people around me before, by like following their work and following the way that they opened up to new things, I gradually started to kind of open up to new things. And as I was taught like in college how to study the Bible as well as I could, as not being in Bible college, using like Blue Letter Bible, that rocked my world. I found out that the Bible wasn't, I didn't have like half the story that I thought I did. And then I became convinced that nobody really had half the story that they thought they did because of like context in the Koine Greek and all these things. And you can like get little peeks at these things without enrolling in a degree program for it for free with this app. And so I would do that all the time. And people that like taught the Bible that I trusted and looked up to, they encouraged that. And in doing that, eventually I was like, there's a lot more to these simple like stances on sexuality, on heaven and hell, on resurrection, on salvation, on all of these things than I was taught about. And one thing that really got me eventually was realizing when I started to hear about, I'll finish one of these sentences, I promise. When I started to hear about Christus Victor, when I started to hear about these different theologies and doctrines that weren't just like New Age stuff that Rob Bell came up with, like when I started to hear about these things and learned that they had actually had roots in church history and church fathers, and it all came down to like God will save everybody. And as someone that was like burdened for people who was taught to believe are lost, and that was really, I was like, wow, that, I mean, that seems to make a lot of sense. And ultimately, like, I want that. Like, even if at the end of the day, it's not true, and I have to just submit to the word of God's authority on the subject, I feel like I can admit to myself that I would rather it be true that everybody go to heaven and everybody, because like I in the ways I was taught, I learned to identify with lots of things that Paul said, in the way that like I'm the chief of sinners. And so like for me to look at, as crazy as that sounds, I hope everybody goes to heaven, for me to look at anybody else as worse than myself is to make a theological misstep. You know what I'm saying? So ultimately it seemed like the best thing for everyone to go to heaven. And it was really surprising and disturbing to see people's reaction to me asking them about that. I totally get it though. Like it was really hard at first for a long time. And I was taught so much to lean on church authority and to trust your elders and the word of your pastor, that I didn't outright in the moment rebel against someone saying like, oh, that's not what the word of God says. I mean, everybody can't go to heaven because that wouldn't be justice. Just like in those moments, I would go like, oh, why do I consistently feel this way? And I would doubt myself more over and over about it than I would scream at anybody ever. Or so yeah, that was pretty much the deal breaker for me. The straw that broke the camel's back, however you say it, was hell. And specifically, I remember I was hanging out with some friends that I made in college at Whataburger, and we were doing like our Bible study activity that we love to do. And like I love these people, and they weren't just like great people to be around and watch stuff with and share stuff with. I felt like I finally found a group of people that was as enthusiastic as studying the Bible as I was. And that like that was a trip for me, and it was awesome. And we were trying to do it a lot. And one of these Bible studies, we were sitting at Whataburger and going through Exodus, and we were going through the plagues. And it came to my attention, like it never had before, that all throughout the plagues, as they're being sent on the Egyptians, when Moses would come to the Pharaoh and ask him, God said to let people go, and this happened, so let him go. After each thing that happened, right before Pharaoh responds, the text would say Pharaoh's heart was hardened, but other times it would say the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. And I was like, which one is it? Because that's a pretty big thing. And because in the end, like his army and him and his firstborn are killed, like they're drowned. And ultimately, if it's him saying no, then he, I guess, deserved those things for not listening to the one true God. But if it was Yahweh at all working stuff to that end, then that's on him. That for me eventually carried over to salvation, because I was constantly trying to work out how to communicate accurately how that works to people. I was like a youth leader, and I worked under someone in the church I grew up in who was like a huge Mark Driscoll fan, like huge everything reformed, and stop asking Jesus into your heart. It's not your buddy, he's your Lord. Like, and eventually I was trying to understand how Jesus could say his disciples is like, no one can come to the Father unless the Father first compels them to come. But then unbelievers are punished for eternity. Like they did something wrong, or like it was their choice. Because like the way that I was taught about salvation, about faith, was like at the end of the day, it's not your not being able to keep the Ten Commandments that makes you a sinner. It's the fact that you were born into sin by the nature of Adam. He had a federal head. Is that the word yep. for it?
Yeah, oh, federal man. Headship pulling up those, theology.
Yeah, pulling up those old terms. And it it drove me really, really crazy, made me really frustrated. And I was kind of ultimately told to trust that God's doing what's best. And it became harder and harder to do that. And so eventually I kind of came to the point of where I was like, maybe this is the truth, but if it is, I don't want any part of it anymore. And so I started stepping back. And it's always interesting to try to talk to other people who have like no idea what this is like, because like everyone has doubts. I feel like that's the like the skeleton in the closet about faith and religion in general. There's not like the people that have doubted and gave up the thing and the people that haven't had doubts yet. It's just there's like the answers that they got satisfied them at the time, and who's to say like who's to blame or to thank for that. It's just like we all have different ways that we work, you know? And eventually I came to see it as like everyone's I think it was I'm gonna name drop and see if you catch it. Alexander Shia.
One more time.
Alexander Shia?
No, I don't know who that is.
No. He's a Bible scholar that I heard about through Rob Bell and the like. And he said people have asked him, it's like, how can I get my super fundamentalist evangelical parents or friends or cousins or grandma to understand where I am and what I'm going through? And he says, you can't. He says, like, they're on a different point in their journey than you are. And it's not to say, like, anyone's ahead of each other or anyone's behind each other. It's just we're all, like, in different places. And as Derek Webb had a really great, like, not opening line, but really close to the beginning of a song that he had on his Fingers Crossed record, where he says, in his song, Stop Listening, he says, nobody stays the same. No one is to blame. Everyone has their own path to walk. And I mean, it's not to carry it to like its furthest conclusion and say no one's to blame for anything, but it's to say, like, in the context of feeling rejected, lost, like you don't have a home, and the things that you believe and think and feel are just, I don't know, at common, at worst, not allowed. Everyone's just on their own journey. And it became harder and harder for me to criticize people for that, except when it came to how we treat other people. And in those points, I'll enter discussions about the Bible and stuff with those people to try and maybe help someone see it's like, hey, like your Bible says like this too. Like it says the thing that you're talking about, but it also says this. And so you at least have to like grapple with that and go forward with that new information. I kind of blabbered on a lot.
No, that's good. That's good. I have a few comments and then questions as well. Just on your last point, I really appreciate the fact that you recognize the fact that we're all on our own journeys. And oftentimes within the evangelical community, there is a lot of tendency to want to heap tons and tons of blame and judgment on the people from their past who raised them with the beliefs that they had.
Which is so interesting. Like at the same time, while I think what I said was valid, it's like a lot of times people want to shoot blame at people. And Brene Brown, I don't know if you've heard of her, has like a great talk about blame and saying like it's just a discharge of negative energy. And but at the same time, like the energy's got to go somewhere. And I haven't been hurt in the ways that a lot of the other people have been hurt. So it totally like while I think there's more going on than that, I also have to make space for the people that were hurt in ways that I can't imagine. It's like, oh yeah, be angry, hate those people for as long as you need to. But also hold in the same space. Eventually blame becomes toxic. It's tough.
And that's weird. That's another thing that I appreciated. It was a comment that I saw. I didn't even like comment in addition to it, but I saw somebody mentioning the idea of all things, even our past, working together for our good. Someone mentioned how in one of these evangelical groups, how that's kind of it can become a toxic idea in terms of basically gaslighting you. If you were to apply that logic to someone that's currently hurting you, and if you're in that moment being counseled, like, well, this will just make you stronger. Like, that's very unhealthy. That's wrong. And you had the nuance that I really appreciated to be able to say that perspective is helpful for things that are in your past, things that are already done. But as far as things in the current moment, you need to recognize that this pain isn't necessarily like there for your good. Like, it's completely normal and natural and healthy and wise to try to move on from that pain, get around it, not allow people to hurt you. And I'm hearing that same kind of nuance here where, you know, there is a space, there's a time to be angry, but then there's also a time to recognize that we are all human beings who have been hurt and who try to make sense of the world. And sometimes the ways that we make sense of the world end up hurting other people. And I think you and I would recognize that we are not exempt from that just because we've had a few shifts in beliefs. That doesn't make us intrinsically less likely to harm someone else. We're all on this journey together and just trying to do our best. And yeah, we bump into each other. We hurt each other. And the best we can do is have empathy, have patience, and try to do better next time. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Sorry, your video kind of froze up.
The audio is getting a little wonky. It says my internet connection is unstable. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. But it's coming back slowly. If it persists, I'll switch my phone or something. I don't know if that would help. I came toward where I started to more or less let go of my faith, but only because I felt like it was letting go of me. I feel like those things are kind of a package deal, and it's weird to explain. But I started to see it's like, oh, we're all in this trial and error game, and that's kind of all we've got. we're all just doing things that we hope will accomplish what we wanted to, but we don't know for sure. Like, we're I came to kind of see that as a mantra, an anthem. It's like, we're all in this trial and error thing, so we might as well act like it.
What does it look like to act like it?
One, to be kinder to ourselves when we when something we try comes up short, when we get burned, get hurt, and not hate ourselves for trying in the first place. But also using, I feel like my journey with Christianity that led to the point that I am now eventually very much became a matter of credibility and consistency. And consistency was a huge thing. And it's like, the Bible say this and say this, and how do those things exist in the same space? And as I came to my belief about the Bible shifted, so did my beliefs about everything and everyone, because that's how I saw life anyway. And eventually I didn't know how to judge people by consistency anymore, or lack thereof. Would be more often lack thereof. So it'd be like, how can you say this when you just said this? It's like, oh, we're all, that's every single person. And I remember toward the end of where I would identify as a Christian, I came to really grow very close to the idea of I believe, help my unbelief. Because like, I was a worship leader and for a long time. And eventually I became very conflicted about, like, are we trying to get people to sing of joy in their salvation when they're not Christians? And that became a real point of like inner conflict for me. I'm like, I don't want people to lie to themselves. And I just thought about this stuff a lot. And so I as like a songwriter myself, and as a believer, I started to try and really focus on like, what can we all say to be true? What is something we can all come together under that is for sure something we can gather around? And my train of thought's running around. I believe my belief in real love. I want to eat less fast food because I feel like crap a lot when I eat it. And I'll say, like, talking with my girlfriend, it's like, we should probably eat out less. And she's like, yeah, we definitely should. We feel better about life and ourselves, and we'd have more energy. And then it's 10 o'clock at night and nothing else is open. we don't want to cook or whatever. And so as I think ultimately, as I came to realize how to be gentler and kinder to myself, I came to find it for other people. And my whole issue with Christianity became, this thing isn't wired to teach you how to love yourself. Mm. It's not like just that the way that I was taught it didn't teach you to love yourself. It's just like, if there were things that I was taught was an open-handed issue, and then there were close-handed issues when it came to the gospel and matters of correct doctrine and stuff. And I heard, like, something like, did Jesus really feed 5,000 people, or was it 3,000 and they rounded up or something? I could say, like, that's an open-handed issue. It's like, you could debate about that and still, you're not like attacking the cores of your Christianity. Like, if you say, like, what if Jesus wasn't born of a virgin? What if that's not a thing? It's like, that's more of a close-handed issue because that's a fundamental thing. And so, like, fundamentalist. Forgot where I was going with that. I believe, help my unbelief.
You mentioned the idea that it's not wired to teach you how to love yourself. So were you getting to the idea that, like, part of the essential, essentials is that, like, we're fundamentally broken?
Yeah. And not only that, like, eventually, it's really weird, I'll say that a lot even though I'm talking about the past. Eventually, I started to feel like it was great that God saw past all my unfaithfulness. And for me, as I grew in my faith and knowledge of the Bible and reading books by people who studied the Bible all the time, unfaithfulness just became a bigger and bigger and bigger circle. It just became like, oh my gosh, it became very, very big. 'Cause at first, like, it's the Ten Commandments, and then it's telling people about your faith. And then it's in the book of James, like, whoever knows the right thing to do and doesn't do it sins. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's so much. Like, that's so constantly, like, every time I was in a car and passed a homeless person, I thought, like, I could get out of this car and just like roll out and, like, go give them money. And because I don't do that, I'm sinning. And that's great that God forgives me for that. And I, you know, loved that part. But then when it came to how can they believe unless someone tells them, and how can someone tell them if no one goes, when it came to that, I was like, hey, God forgives you for your lack of unfaithfulness, for not sharing the gospel with someone when you felt like you were supposed to, when you had the opportunity. It was like, great, you can see past that. You can see past that, and there's enough mercy for every day, and then your kindness and grace is new every morning, and however you want to say it. But at the end of the day, like, that's a lot on me, even though I don't save anybody. It's still like, it sounds like it's kind of up to me to initiate things. And yeah, surely, like, people get saved outside of me and my actions. And, like, Paul said, like, if all of us are faithless, does God still remain faithful? It's like, well, yeah, of course he does. But then you've got Paul over here saying, like, well, how's anyone going to come to faith unless someone goes and tells them? And so going back and forth between those things, it was very much a, it was a terrible pressure. And then when I really sat down with it, it was like, that's a terrible reality. And, like, why does that have to be true? And if God is God and answers to no one, then why is he seem to be bound by these things? And it all eventually just kind of circled the drain, and then I wanted to part ways with it.
So. Yeah. No, I hear you. Like, we're in slightly different spots, because if I remember correctly, you currently do not identify as a Christian, whereas I still do of a universalist sort, but the paths that we took to get to where we're at, the values that we currently have, the things that we care about, the kind of life we're trying to live, like those are all so similar. And I definitely relate to that aspect of just the pressure that that system puts you under, where there are eternal amounts, infinite amounts of pain and pleasure that come down to single moments that we either act on or don't. And not that's a lot of pressure to have for yourself, to think that if I mess up, then I might gain or lose an infinite amount of pain or pleasure. But it is so much more. It's like, take that amount of pressure and then multiply it times infinity for having to care for someone else that much. I mean, I don't have kids. I'm married, so I know sort of that kind of sense of feeling responsible for someone else. I have younger brothers and a family, so I get it. I get the idea of, like, I have an obligation to protect someone. And I feel like that's sort of hardwired into who I am. If I see something happening, like, I want to speak up. I want to act. I want to protect. And it's like, you can't protect everyone in that evangelical structure. Like, you can't. People are going to lose. And no matter how much grace you sprinkle on after the fact, it's your fault. You're the one that screwed up. And I just couldn't take that pressure anymore either. So I went the route of universalism. And I am kind of curious, because you mentioned Rob Bell, like you were aware of that as an option. Why? I mean, this is such a simplistic question. It's such a simplistic question, but why didn't you take that route?
This was one of the weirdest realizations over the past 3 years. And it's that my faith, my Christian faith, was both the most real thing in the world to me for years. Still the majority of my life. My Christian faith was more real to me than anything. And I did things constantly. I'd like to say constantly. I don't know. It confused my friends and my family. I did things out of what I believed, what was in line with that faith, that looked like, oh, wow, this is, he believes it's like 100%. Whether I was right or wrong, I was upsetting things for that faith. So, and I felt those things, and I had these genuine, like, I wrote down prayers, like, all the time. Anything that I ever wrote eventually just became a prayer, because I'm like, it just goes into that. If I'm going into the deepest parts of myself, I'm going to hit that. And eventually, those things were one and the same. And so I believe my faith was 100% real, but also I believe it expired. And it was because, as awesome as these resources were that I found, and like the few good friends that really supported me through my faith dissolving, as it were, as great as those people were and as great as those resources were, I came to believe what I believed amongst the church community. And I was taught that a church community was like vital to someone's faith being alive. I'll just say alive. I can't think of what other words. As far as it being healthy, that's another one. And I didn't want to do it alone. If anything, I was a couple of times, me and my close few friends who also deconstructed, that's the word for it now. We were like, we should start our own church and we'll do things this way. And eventually we're like, no one's going to come to our church. And,
I'd go.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. There would be a God to worship. So we would mostly sing and talk about how the scriptures are some of the most heartfelt and beautiful and honest writings in the world, in the history of writing. We do that. And we talk about how those things can, affect us and transform us, the word that Rob Bell uses, I guess the Bible uses it too, in our daily lives now, but we wouldn't really pray or
anything. So where did that aspect kind of slip off? At what point did the belief in God crumble? Because I get the idea of, you know, there were certain things about God's character that you found incompatible with the Christianity that you were taught. And yet, in my mind, I'd also, like, you know, in the 19th century, the hip thing to be was a deist. you know, like there's some type of God out there. Like,
yeah.
In what ways was, did that dissolve?
Well, even while I was a Christian in college, it was really cool to, it wasn't really cool at the time. It was pretty unsettling, but eventually it just made reality sweeter for me at the time to realize that what I was going to weekly, more than weekly, I guess it was like 2-3 times a week when I was like going to church and doing stuff. What I was engaging in and involved in was groupthink, like or at least groupthink was a huge element of that. And at first it was like, no, it's not. That's not me. That's not my church. That's not me. Like that's like hardcore hellfire and brimstone fundamentalist or whatever, but like that's not me. And then one night I remember like being in worship and just like looking around and going like, yep, that's what this is. But that didn't make me want to break away from it. It was a weird thing to find out, but then eventually it was like, oh wow, like God wired us in the way that groupthink can accomplish beautiful things or terrible things. And the mob mentality, I've seen it feed the homeless, and I've heard about it destroying civilizations. So, you know, like when, I guess this is a part of the story to include that would be helpful. So I guess it would really come down to like, I didn't want to do it alone or even just with the few friends that I had. It felt like, not only would it be really hard, but also like we were bitter. Like, we started talking about the idea of starting a church as a joke. And what happened between me being a leader at the church where I grew up while I was still in college, and then me kind of my faith dissolving entirely, was that church losing pretty much all of its leadership in like a year. And I had a really good relationship with one of those people, and eventually like they were looking at me like, I'm not going to tell you that you should leave, but do you feel like you can grow and be encouraged in this place as much as you grow, as much as you encourage and pour into them, you know, those words. And I was like, oh man, no, I don't think I can. And so then I find toward like I had been involved with two churches like throughout college and was doing like small group leadership in both for a while. And then I was a small group leader over here and the church back where I grew up, and I was just doing the events and stuff involved in those things, like the monthly going to feed the homeless and occasional meals at people's houses, whatever, those things with my college church. And then when it became really apparent to me that the church I was working for back home was, I wasn't gonna like grow there in a way that I would felt like I was supposed to or be like encouraged there. And I was like, okay, well, I need to lean 100% into my college church. And I did. And it was really hard, really, really hard to leave that church that I grew up with. But it was great. And I love still, like, if anyone is like living in the town where I went to college and is looking for a church, I will 100% recommend that church to them. I like those people are some of the best people I've ever met and some of the most caring and kind and compassionate human beings I've ever encountered in my life. Despite the fact that I no longer believe the stuff that I did when I got to know them and they were like my family, extension of my family, however you want to say it. So it felt like I didn't have the energy to try and seek out a new thing. I didn't feel the will to seek out a new thing. When
was it kind of like you had given so much to it the first go around that it was like I don't have any more to give right now?
Well, yeah, like I gave like all of myself to the church that I grew up with for a long time. And then steadily, I started learning to give more and more to myself to the church that I went to in college. And then eventually, when the doubts and friction started to grow with those people, I was like, these are some of the best people I've ever met. So like, it almost felt like the opposite of if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. I don't know. Yeah,
I see what you're saying. Where it's like, really, if it doesn't work among these like great people that I know, like, I'm not going to find a better community to do this in.
Yeah, and also the cold hard reality was like, I was listening to Laird's podcast and reading Rob Bell's stuff, and I knew about these churches that were teaching other things that I was totally on board with, and I couldn't go to those churches. Like, and I needed that setting. I needed that environment. And eventually, like, I had to face them, like, I don't have any like money. It's like, I just graduated college. I would love to go to one of those places, but like, just uproot my life for this, to like keep this thing alive that I'm mostly just mad at by now. And eventually just kind of fizzled out with only the steady streams of encouragement through podcasts and those few friends who, like, not to discount those few friends at all, they're like, I don't know how I would have done the past 3-4 years of my life without those people. I love them very much, but still, just like the weight that I had come to put on the community and my place in a large community, and the fact that I did not have a large community near me like that anymore. I guess it was just really kind of shell shocking. And yeah. I the first time I thought about it, it blew my mind. It was like, oh, like, my faith expired. Like, at that time, I could have, like, just put everything that I had into my car and left and not talk to, like, anybody again, and pretty much, like, tried to make it on the streets of whatever, Portland or wherever, and just to, like, be a part of that church, and maybe I'd find a group of people that would, like, take me in for a while until I could get up on my feet. But, I didn't have the energy to do that. And then, like, that's a lot to ask of a person whose worldview isn't falling apart. Like,
yeah.
So,
and I get that. It's honestly the thing that I wouldn't say I'm afraid of it, because I don't think that there's anything intrinsically fearful about it. I guess the only reason I'd be afraid of it is because it would indicate something inauthentic in what I currently hold. But I'm genuinely curious of, like, will there be a point where, from a lack of community, lack of reinforcement or something like that, where it kind of fizzles out for me as well? Like, it's a genuine question. And I know enough people who have been able to make that transition from kind of conservative Christianity to more progressive Christianity to sort of more in the agnostic camp, where, and the way they tend to describe it is like, the things that I thought I had to hold on to, like, I didn't really. Like, my life is still complete without it. And there's almost a part of some people, including myself, that I think is afraid, like, what if I'm okay without it? Like, what if I'm fine without this structure, without this philosophical perspective, this religious perspective on reality? And that's a whole separate question from, you know, the more philosopher mind is just saying, like, hey, well, what's true? Like, let's look at the arguments for and against. There's that psychological element that's very real of, like, do I need this? And with churches being shut down right now, like, I think that I know that for myself, it's been an interesting thing where I haven't missed it as much as I thought that I would. And it's just it's a weird place to be.
I can imagine. And I talked with someone recently about, like, she was upset about churches being closed. It was like a month and a half ago. And she was saying, it was like, I thought the people of God were supposed to not bow down to the state, and saying these things. I'm like, but don't you care about people's safety as well? And she's like, yeah, I do. That's why I'm saying this. And at first we just like butted heads for like 20 minutes. And then she brought up the reality of how many people live alone, and a lot of people who are really like anxious or awkward or you're socially awkward, like church is their only outlet for like community and being around people. That's like legitimately a danger to their physical health. And it was really sobering. I had a hardcore sobering moment yesterday. Just that was a very sobering thing for me to find out and consider. I mean, and it all, like, even the church that I've been a part of in college, we were real like huggy, like we're brothers and sisters in Christ kind of thing. And eventually I came to see that's not everyone's bag and we shouldn't force it on everybody. But for the people that did like warm up to it, they're like, oh yeah, they feel like family. Like we just hug each other and stuff. And like a lot of people have that, but they're in church and they don't have it right now. And it's,
yeah,
I mean, that's sad. Even if I don't agree with what they believe, it's just like,
yeah,
I don't want you to go through loss of that. But like, like you said about being afraid if it would ever come to that point for you.
Because what's really interesting is that when I was in college, I had a sort of crisis of faith where the importance level of resolving that crisis was at 100%, where it's like, I don't know what I believe and I need to figure this out because heaven and hell are at stake. But there is a legitimate point to the criticism. I think ultimately it's not an actual criticism, but there's something to the idea that like the stakes are much lower with what I believe than with what I used to believe. And when the stakes are lower, kind of by definition, it doesn't matter as much how you, whether you're in or whether you're out, whether you're Christian or whether you're not. And so when there's a part of me that's wondering in the back of my head, like, will I just keep, like, will I just walk away? Will I get comfortable not caring? Like, will I reach, because this is what I was trying to say initially. The first time that crisis of faith hit, it was like, I need to figure this out. But then within this last year or so of really thinking through things, there is, you know, it's like at a 20 to 45% level of importance now. Whereas before it was like the thing where it's like, yeah, I want to figure out what I believe. I want to make sense of this. But, you know, I also really enjoy coaching. I enjoy making podcasts. There are other things that matter to me now that I've been freed up to explore because there's no longer just one thing that matters, saving souls. Like lots of stuff has my attention now. So yeah, I definitely can see the path for how it could just sort of dissolve, go to the back of my head and then maybe just kind of forget about it, stop believing almost by accident.
Yeah. Or like by default. And I've joked around with my friend Josh before. I remember one time I was over at his house when I was still like really in the throes of it and really like feeling the deep loss. It was still fairly fresh, probably like a year or so since I left the church community altogether. And we were just like talking about our history with Christianity, because like he has one as well. And he was more towards no longer believing in God at all at that point than I was, I think. And I asked him, so like, do you ever think that maybe our like all the stuff that we go through in our head about what we believe and how we need to know what it is and how, you ever think it's like only because we're young? And he's like, yeah, dude, totally. Like, he's like 2 years older than me. He's like, that's what's going on. And I was like, I had a crazy doctor's appointment a few years ago that made me very curious about the brain from there on. And as I've been trying to learn about the brain, I learned about things like neuroplasticity and the fact that it naturally decreases as you get older, and kind of what you think and believe about things naturally by default start to solidify if you're not actively seeking out new perspectives and new stories. I've heard things that help with the slowing of decreasing neuroplasticity, which allows you to like see from other perspectives and to reconsider things. Things like learning a new language or learning how to play a new instrument. And to me, it's just like entering a different world that you're not familiar with and trying to become a civilian. And it's really interesting to think about yourself as just kind of like, oh yeah, I've got a brain that's on a cycle that's got a lifespan, and it's at a certain point in that cycle where for most people in the world, this is kind of what's going on. And to kind of weigh what you're feeling and thinking against that. That's really, and from what I've heard, the brain really starts to solidify and stuff at like 25. So like at that time, I think I was 25.
That's really interesting. I'm 25 also. And this is the first year that I've kind of been like, you know what? I'll sort of just pick what I believe and go with it and stop worrying so much. That's really funny.
It's Because, like, I've thought before when I've been I've definitely become more liberal since I've let go of Christianity, and I've thought, will I eventually just become conservative when I turn 40? Like, is that what's going to happen? Like, the cold, harsh facts that I don't want to face are in Republican conservatism, and I'm just ready to hold. I just want to hold on to the heart of youth and stuff, and caring about people, and believing I can change the world or whatever. And because I wondered about that a lot. It's like, at what point will my values flip around? Will that happen? What will contribute to that? Because after going through something like it's not only like, man, I never thought I could learn to like broccoli, and now you like broccoli. It's like, oh, the way that I understood everything and the way that I understood myself and everyone around me, that completely changed. So if that can change, like,
yeah,
what is exempt from that? And so I wonder about the nature of those things all the time now.
Those are definitely very good questions. I wanted to segue just for a second here, because we've been talking for about an hour or a little bit more now, and I wanted to ask you about your music. So I know that you mentioned at the beginning you're a musician. I've actually listened to some of your songs. They're thumbs up. I give my approval to you.
Thanks,
but
man,
I just want to hear a little bit more about what you're currently doing with that. I know you recently kind of quit your main job and you're pursuing this. So how's that going?
Oh, man. It's funny. I was thinking this morning about like how I always had questions for full-time musicians. And the main question was like, how do you know when like that's the thing that you need to be doing full time and giving your all to that? Like, how did you know when that like happened? And I always expected an answer like, when I realized this one day, it was like, this is what I gotta do, and I can't like waste my life doing anything else. Not to say that doing anything else in life is a waste, but I was thinking this morning, I was like, man, the biggest advice I have for people right now that are full-time musicians is like, do anything else if you can. if you can and not lose your mind. And I remember I used to think about like pastors saying that. I thought like, it sure doesn't sound like you enjoy being a pastor. It kind of sounds like you're a slave to it. But right now, in the midst of COVID days, when can't like play live shows and get your exposure out that way, and like everything has to be online, even though everything's most online anyway, it's a lot. It's a lot to keep up with, and there are a lot of tools. I've heard from Derek Webb, one of my favorite singer songwriters. I guess you've probably heard of Derek Webb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He said like a lot of his musician friends were like lamenting the entrance of a digital age away from CDs and stuff, and it's like the music business is like dying out. And he's like, no, like there's never been a better time to be a like independent musician if you utilize the tools that you have in front of you. And I agree with that more than ever. But also, it's so much to keep up with.
if I were a musician, which I'm not, and I wanted to begin the process of marketing my music online. Let's say I had recorded an album or maybe just even a couple songs, and I kind of wanted to get into this space. Like, what would I do? Like, I know there's a lot of different routes, a lot of different options, a lot of different strategies, but kind of what would you recommend as kind of the first few things?
I would say realize and accept right now that even your closest friend's attention span are generally pretty short when it comes to looking at things online and on social media. And I would say your best bet to not take that personally, I guess that would be a thing to go ahead and start. But like, you have a podcast and you're trying to get the word out about a business you're doing. So like, you've realized, as I have by now, it's like, just because you like know people and they've said like, oh yeah, really love what you do and support it someday, doesn't mean like you put something up and they're gonna go like, oh bam, there's a thing, and go right to it, or it's gonna show right up. You you got to work at it, even for it to show up to your friends. And that's not to their discredit at all, and not to be like, I thought they were my friends, but then they didn't care about my stuff. It's just like, there's so much that your thing has to poke through as something that's worthwhile to give your attention to. And I would say, if you have recording equipment, learn how to record a decent single yourself, and then pay the $20 to put it up on Spotify and share that with people. Because that's the, that's definitely not the end all be all to making money with music, but that's the way to get yourself out there and get people to hear you really quick.
It's where people are listening right now.
Yeah. And like, you can keep Spotify open and work on something else. And that's what a lot of people do. Cause I mean, like, I've tried to really be honest with myself as I'm like setting up these ads and these campaigns and stuff. Like, how do I treat other people's when I see theirs? Like, what grabs and my mentor has really encouraged us to do that. He said, like, what are the things that grab your attention? Consider those things and implement them into what you're trying to do, which seems like common sense, but you really have to actively think about it or it won't be there. You'll just try and be like, oh, what's the coolest thing and most content I can put in there and most whatever. And it's like, nah, man, like the shorter and simpler, the better. It's more likely people give time to it. Even if people love to read, they don't always like to read novel posts. And like, as a writer, that's something I've had to learn, like posting about music or about the pre-order offer that I have for the album. I can't ramble on forever or no one's going to read it. I would say, go ahead and start learning to not take it personal when your friends don't immediately jump on your stuff. And get a decent single recorded somehow and pay $20 to put it up on Spotify. It's like, it's $20 for a year of however many songs you want to upload under one artist's name. So it's really like,
oh, that's not bad at all.
No, not at all. The reason I took so long to upload mine, I've had this recording of the one that's up on Spotify for like 3 or 4 years now. I was under the impression for some reason that it was like $150 to start uploading stuff on Spotify. And I don't know. I just recently sat down. I'm like, why did I think that? This is so much, that doesn't involve money that I could afford to spend at the time. So yeah.
Have someone focus more on like the marketing side of things, or would you just tell them to keep pumping out as much music as they can? Kind of how would you approach that?
Work at marketing, because if I'm talking to a musician, that's not the thing that comes naturally to your brain. Give that what you can, and when your brain needs a break, work on something that you know and that you're familiar with, like music. For me, I've kind of set up to where I'm constantly working on something, like a new song that I'm going to be putting out, because the way that my pre-order offer works, not to segue to a plug, but for anyone that pre-orders my album that I'll be dropping hopefully by the end of the year, they'll get a bunch of stuff. They'll get like the, I remember all of it. They'll get a chapter for free from the book that I'll be releasing along with the album that kind of goes in deeper into the stuff that I'm talking about in the album, which is a lot of what we talked about today, just not in explicit words, because it's more emotion-y things, and emotion-y things I find are less specific a lot of times. But like Rob Bell says, like, if you go deep enough into yourself, you find everybody else. And anyway, so it includes that, a free chapter from the book, album liner notes that no one else but pre-orders will get, and also 150 songs from over the past 13 years as I've been writing stuff, because I wanted to make it something really special and worthwhile. And because like, this is my first thing besides the Spotify thing single that I'll be putting out into the world, and I want to, you know, assure people that it's more than worth their money. So like every 2 weeks, for people that pre-order the album, they'll get another song from those archives of songs that I've written over the years, and just never really had the tools or know how to put together. Because I've still got a lot of them like in my head. It's like, oh, this is how I wanted this to sound, but I can never like get a band together and make it sound that way, and can never keep the band together if I had it together. And because anyone can start a band, it takes a lot to keep it. I've been on both sides of that. I've been the person that the band couldn't stay together because of my habits, and the person that was like, can't keep his band together because of your habits. I've been on both sides, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So anyway,
when it comes to the marketing side, I imagine that, like you said, for a lot of musicians, that would be harder, less natural to get yourself to do. Is there a kind of a perspective or a frame that you put around it that you find helpful for motivating yourself to learn more about that and to take it seriously and to even enjoy it? Or is it just, you know, you just got to sit on your butt and do it?
I feel like it's a give and take of both, a little tug of war. Because never have I even mostly depended on music for income. And so now it's like, the perspective is sit down and do it because you like money, like being able to pay bills. I mean, like, there's lots of great services and stuff that can help people supplement their income, like DoorDash and stuff that you don't necessarily need any special skills for. But it's, for me, it's hard to look forward to sitting down and doing that work a lot of times. And my mentor even like talked about this in one of the early lessons. He says, like, you'll be surprised how, like, however much you love the thing that you're doing and trying to put out into the world, how much eventually you'll be like, I could just sit on the couch and watch Netflix. Like, as much as it's like the thing that you've like fought to do for years, and you'll like miss assignments in school because you were doing this thing, and you like give so much time to it because you're so passionate about it, which is not to negate that at all or take anything away from that. It's that once you start really putting work into it, it all can be something that you need a break from. And that's been an interesting thing to learn, because it used to be just like music was my spare time, like a thing that I did in my spare time, and I would just always be writing songs. And now that it's like my business, it's my spare time looks more like Spyro on the Switch and just like something, because I'm not really much of a gamer, so like having that's like a thing that I can just kind of let my mind go, and it's a very different thing from the things that I'm supposed, like, that I have to be working on. And just like reading, getting away from screens entirely, that's really important for my brain. But yeah, as far as a perspective to put it into, to help you see it as enjoyable, the stuff that I'm doing anyway, the way that I'm going about it, it's kind of following along with videos and watch him click this thing and he pauses it and go and click that thing and then play it. And so it gets grueling sometimes, but ultimately, I would say something that's really important is to find something of yours that you've created that you can just enjoy, like go back and listen to it and enjoy, and like remember, it's like, oh yeah, like I want to share this with people, and this is why I'm going through all this stuff. Besides, you know, you want to live and have money, be able to pay bills and stuff, and but also for me, as first and foremost a writer, sometimes it's really helpful to me to go back and look at songs and then just write about where they came from and what they mean to me and what inspired those things. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I'm doing all this. And this is where the fire for it comes from. And that helps a lot. I'm still working on putting together the album liner notes for the album that'll be coming out. And so these songs that are going to be on this album are now from like up as many as 4 years ago. And I like to think I'm a fairly different person than 4 years ago. And lots of stuff that I was really deep in the trenches of, now I'm like, all right, moving on to other stuff. But going back and looking at the heart of those things and where they came from is continually important to me, and can just breathe new life into the thing that you have to do now. So yeah,
that's awesome.
Eat your veggies.
Well, cool. That's really good information, good tips on kind of how to start, how to get going, the right mindset to have. I think I'm going to wrap this podcast up now. So just in conclusion, could you, if you have any final thoughts on anything we've talked about, this is your time to get those out. And then also just kind of point listeners to one, maybe two places that they can kind of follow up with you at to get their music, to get your music, or to just connect with you on social media, something like that.
Yeah. Final thoughts. I know I've got something worthwhile to say. I don't know. It's important to stay informed, but it's as important, maybe more important, to care for yourself and your mental health. So in this world, country, place where every day it seems like it's literally more dangerous just to be alive and care about things, care for yourself first. And if you learn to be kind to yourself and prioritize that, you'll find that kindness flows out to other people. That sounds really lofty. But it just took me forever to learn that. And I just want to say that as often as I can and as inconsistently as I do the best that I can to try and care for myself. I'm finding that that's just the most important thing in the world to say. Because it, like, as selfish as it can sound, it's the most selfless thing. It's the most important thing. As far as where to find my stuff, I've got a song on Spotify under Adam Anderson. The song is called Be Still. There's lots of Adam Andersons in the world, and I am one of them. And I have a song called Be Still on Spotify. I've got a free song called Grace that you can download with no strings attached. Probably could put some links somewhere in the show notes or something that will lead to where to get that. And it'll start to take you through the album pre-order thing naturally, which I would love it if you jumped on board with that. But if you don't, no hard feelings. The song that it says is free is 100% free, and you can just get that and leave if you want to. But and to find me on social media is Adam Anderson Music on Facebook and AdamAnderson.music on Instagram. And I'm not cool enough for Twitter yet. So
it is overrated. That's my hot take for the day.
I'm too much of a long-winded person to have Twitter.
Yeah, like, even on Instagram, you can write out long posts if you have the patience on your thumbs to just keep typing.
Yeah. I use Twitter. Like, I don't even follow my friends on Twitter. Like, if I want to find out what's going on in your life, I'll text you. I follow authors and celebrities and people that are saying about events that they're setting up and books that are coming out or whatever. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all I got.
Sweet. Well, thank you again, Adam, for coming on the show. And to everyone listening.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, everyone listening, go ahead and click that link in the show notes and download that free song. See you next time.